All right, looks like the sound is coming in clear. And I just want to let everybody know who's on the line that if you're unable to stay with us for the full session, this is being recorded, and we will upload the recorded session to our webinar archive on our website within the next week or two, so you'll be able to access this. If you have any questions during the webinar, please chat them into the question box, and we'll try to take them as we go along, but we will save about 15 minutes at the end to take questions. So let's begin. Just a little bit of background on the Fulbright Scholar Program. The mission of the program is really vast. We have 160 partner countries worldwide, and really we are focused on offering opportunities to passionate and accomplished faculty, administrators, artists, journalists, lawyers, and other professionals, independent scholars, to study, teach, or conduct research. So particularly with the Scholar Program, this is aimed toward faculty, researchers, independent scholars, et cetera. And the mission of the program is to connect people, to connect nations, and advance knowledge across communities, and ultimately improve lives around the world. The program was established in 1946 by Congress, and it is the U.S. government's flagship international education and cultural exchange program. It's sponsored by the U.S. Department of State, along, you know, with funding from the U.S. government, as well as our many partner countries around the world that sometimes even contribute more than the share of the U.S. government. So it's highly leveraged around the world. And it is administered by the cooperating agency, IIE, the Institute of International Education. This is the State Department's diversity and inclusion statement. It's very important for the program to reflect the diversity of the United States and the society that we have here. And so we encourage everyone who's eligible to participate in the program, regardless of their background or national origin, socioeconomic status, et cetera. Okay, so in terms of the baseline eligibility for the U.S. Scholar Program, U.S. citizenship is required. And then depending on the award, and you'll find all of that information in each of the award descriptions, you may or may not see a requirement for a terminal degree, but the vast majority of awards do require some kind of terminal degree. But we do have some that are open to those that have master's degrees and professional or academic experience. We have awards that are open to professionals, including lawyers and journalists, artists, dancers, et cetera. And then you'll also note some teaching experience requirements. If it's a teaching award, sometimes they'll say 3 to 5 years teaching experience after the at the higher level, higher education level. And then we do have a new policy on previously held Fulbright grants. If you have had a grant in the past, we ask that you wait 2 years between grants. Okay, so we are going to be covering a lot of awards today, and I want to just help you understand how to navigate all of the options, because the awards catalog itself has about 470 unique award opportunities. You can only apply for one award, so it's really important to consider the things here that I've outlined that so that you make the most of your selection and are really the best fit. So things to consider would include your expertise, your experience, and the proposal, and then how it relates to that particular country. So keeping in mind if you have any regional experience or linguistic abilities, if there's a list of preferred disciplines or preferred specializations in the award, and ultimately how it relates to the country and how the host country or the host institution will benefit from your project. It's also important to keep an eye out for the career level that the award is looking for. Some are specifically looking for early career or postdoc applicants. Others are looking more for senior scholars and those of the Distinguished Chair Awards. So there's a whole range of awards to consider, and the category will be clearly labeled in the award description. All right, so I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues in Brazil and have them tell you a little bit about the hidden gems that they have to offer, as well as a couple of the new awards that we recently added to the catalog. So Patrícia and Christian, over to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Michelle. Thank you, everyone, for being here with us. This is Patrícia Grijó from the Commission in Brazil. I'm here with my colleague, Cristiana Galhaço. She works directly with the U.S. Scholar Program. And, well, again, we are very happy with the opportunity to talk to you. You can see on the screen the opportunities that we offer this year. So we have five distinguished chairs in different areas. And we have third grants for scholars in all fields and five opportunities for postdoctoral scholars in natural science. We were advised by Michelle to highlight what are successful projects for us. I think what we would like to emphasize is that there are many ways that we can rank a project as successful. And projects in all areas are welcome. But for us, and very likely to other commissions, successful projects usually are the ones that involve the community during and after the grant. When scholars present their projects and during their time in Brazil, they can expand their connections and the network and the benefits of the grant, not only to themselves, but also to the community, not necessarily the university community where they are or the Brazilian institution where they are, but outside of these settings. That's when we rank our project as successful. I think, Michelle, let me know if this is fine, if I can go on with the other suggestions that we had, that you had, like information on letters of invitation, proficiency in Portuguese. Can I go on?
Yeah, that would be great, because I noticed for the Distinguished Chair Awards, all four of them, a letter of invitation should not be sought. So could you go into a little detail as to how a grantee can, or an applicant rather, can put together a good application without being able to contact the host?
Thank you very much for raising that. For the Distinguished Chair applicants, they should actually contact the potential host. They should contact the institution, and that's why we usually provide the contact information in the grant announcement, because that's when they can line up their project, their expectations, And it's when the institution, especially the ones in the distinguished chair opportunities, that's when they can tell the applicants if the project is viable, if it will bring an impact to both. So they should, we highly recommend that they contact the institution. But they don't need, during the application process, for the application to be complete. We don't require that they present a formal letter of invitation.
Okay, that's very helpful, because we do have other awards in other countries that not only do they state a letter should not be sought, but they also bar the applicant from making contact. So this is very helpful because I do notice, for example, in the Distinguished Chair in Legal Theory Studies at the Catholic University of Rio de Janeiro, the contact is listed. So that's very helpful for applicants to understand that even though they don't have to get the letter and it's actually not required, they can make the contact to understand the needs and requirements of the particular university.
Yes, that's it. I think I would like to add that, for example, applicants for the U.S. Scholars All Fields, they have to present the invitation letter. So that's different, you know, but that's when we require that. So they don't need the letter if they are interested in the distinguished chair opportunity, but they do need one for the All Fields and the postdoctoral scholar award in natural science.
Right, that's great. So could you share a little bit about the, because the one chair award that stands out from the rest is the Distinguished Chair in Public Policy at the Joaquim Nabuco Foundation. So since this one's funded by a foundation, where would the applicant be placed and how do they work with the foundation for this award?
Oh, good. This is a new one. It's its second year, and the first selected scholar will be coming early next year. But they will be hosted and they will be physically working at the foundation. They are located in Recife, and they have a school there of public administration, and that's where the scholar will be working. That's with this institution, this school that he or she will be associated with.
Okay, great. Before we move on to the postdoc award, is there anything else in terms of information that applicants should know about the chair awards, because you do have four, and that's quite a bit. Most countries may only have one, if any. So this is really exciting that you have a lot of opportunities for senior scholars.
Yeah, before I answer and your question, Michelle, I see that on the screen I see only four distinguished chair of distinguished chairs in Brazil. I'm not sure. Seems to me that one is missing, the one in American Studies at the Federal University of Minas Gerais in Belo Horizonte.
Yes, so I just selected some highlights, and so I left that one out because it was featured in another webinar.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that going on to your questions, I think we could add that, again, I'd like to emphasize that we welcome projects and applications in all fields. I think we usually get a higher number of applications in the social science and humanities, but we appreciate very much when we receive applications in the natural sciences and in the STEM fields. So I really would like to encourage the candidates, if they are from these fields, that their applications are very much welcome. Before we go on about language proficiency, I think this the wording in our announcement is clear, but it's always good the opportunity to emphasize again that depending on the field, you don't need to have proficiency in Portuguese. That will vary according to how much you will be working with people outside of the universe or the main institution. If you have to rely on having interviews on meeting people, on doing research on your own outside of that everyday environment at university, then some Portuguese positions would be recommended so that you can, you don't need to rely on others, you can be more independent on your communication with people that are not part of the academy. But other than that, in usually fields in the STEM and in the natural science, grantees can, they don't need to present Portuguese proficiency because you can teach in English and in those fields.
Okay, great. So Patricia, I have one question. What is your guidance or advice for applicants that have been back and forth to Brazil? Is there a preference for those that have not had experience in Brazil? I know the postdoc award prefers those that do not have significant experience in Brazil. So how do you handle that?
We have a preference for candidates with not extensive experience in Brazil. And so depending on the pool of candidates each year, it's true that we may choose candidates without experience or with not extensive experience over others that have a long-term connection with the country. I don't mean that people with connections shouldn't apply because, as I said, it depends on the pool and on the project too. Sometimes it is necessary, it makes sense for that candidate with their project to try the opportunity, and there are many things that can change at the last moment during the selection process in Brazil.
Okay, great. And then the last thing I wanted to point out about the chair awards is that it looks like the flex option is available. So for teaching, I know that some of these are teaching and research grants. Is that something that is open to the flex option as well?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Sure. So I noticed that some of the chair awards have the flex option available. So, for example, the chair in international relations at University of Sao Paulo has flex listed as an option. So if someone wants to do teaching and research, how would that work if they came on two segments?
Yeah, some chairs allow grantees to come in two visits, to split the 4 months in two visits. And, well, it has worked. Most of them, actually, most of the grantees from these chairs, they split the visits, the grant in two visits. Because usually it's more feasible for them to come for 2 months instead of 4 months.
So then what do their teaching responsibilities look like? Because in 2 months they're not there for the full semester. So do they hold workshops and seminars, or how does that work? Is it kind of a block seminar of classes?
Yes. Sometimes they teach courses that are not semester long. So, yeah, it's possible.
Okay, yeah, they great.
This is Patrice again. Yeah, for teaching and research, for both, we have no opposition to receiving flex proposals. And it will depend on what the invitation letter says about that. It's something actually that I think we didn't mention, that the host associate faculty in Brazil can mention in the letter how the project is going to be developed. So if it is going to be in 4 months or in two visits, and how this candidate could develop his project, her project, in 2 months if the person is going to be in a teaching activity.
Okay, great. So let's move on. The last award we wanted to cover is the Postdoctoral Scholar Award in Natural Sciences. So there's up to 5 grants for that. Did you want to share a little bit about that?
I'm not sure there is much that we can say about this. We are, I don't remember now any special recommendation. It's a recent opportunity. So we actually are looking forward to receiving applications in this area and in this level.
Great. So just to clarify, so this is the postdoc award, and the eligible grant activity is teaching and research or research only. So a great experience to have in Brazil for 4 to 9 months. So thank you so much, Patricia and Christiane. Let's move on to our opportunities in Canada and have Paulo share a little bit about the research chairs in business and economics.
Yes, thank you, Michelle. Thank you for inviting us for this webinar. For this particular presentation, we have selected 2 groups of research chairs that we offer from Canada. Currently, we are offering around 50 research chairs from Fulbright Canada to U.S. scholars, but in this presentation, we will focus only on 2 major groups, the business and economics, and afterwards the environment. For the business and economics, there are 3 research chairs that are being offered by Queen's, the University of Alberta, and the University of Ottawa that are all for a 4-month period, and that will enable the recipients to have financial support of $25,000. These opportunities are mostly to be at the university in Canada between September to December or January to April, May of 2020 for the fall term and 2021 for the winter term, so between January and May. And they are mostly aimed at U.S. scholars that are interested in a large variety of research topics, because most of these opportunities are for research. However, depending on the host institution arrangements with the successful recipient, there may be opportunities to do other activities like lectures or joint presentations within those 4 months period. In addition to those research chairs, there is also another opportunity under business and economics that is being offered by Carleton University in Ottawa for what it's called the Distinguished Chair in Entrepreneurship, which is for a full academic year, so 9 months. This particular award, although it's called Distinguished Chair, doesn't mean that it's only for senior scholars from the U.S. However, because it is for a larger period of time, the university is looking for applicants that are interested in a variety of activities while they are in Canada. So research, teaching, eventually lecturing, doing some joint presentations, all of those could be developed during this academic year. This opportunity will provide financial support of around $50,000 for the scholar. And one of the things that it's important to notice is that the financial support that it's provided can be added to whatever the scholar has access through other sources. So if the person is doing a sabbatical, if he's receiving funding from some other agency, that's fine. There's no need to avoid receiving funding to be able to access the grant from Fulbright Canada. These opportunities are mostly for people within the business and economics field, but also obviously they are open to people from management, marketing, and similar fields that relates to the management field of knowledge in general. One of the specificities of Fulbright Canada is that when you are applying, you are able to apply to a primary award and then list secondary options. So the advantage is that you are able to, with the same project statement, so the limitation is that you are only able to submit one project statement, but you can apply to more than one award as long as they are related to that project statement, obviously. So this is basically the overview that I have for the business and economics. Michelle, I don't know if there's
okay.
Particular...
Yeah, so Paulo, just to pick up on that point that you just mentioned. So I mentioned in the beginning, and for those that have just joined in, so for the Fulbright Scholar Program, the application allows you to select one award, but the unique thing about the application when you select an award to Canada, Paulo has explained that you can also list other awards in Canada as secondary interest. Is that correct, Paulo?
Yes, yeah. Because we offer so many research chairs, several applicants have mentioned the willingness to apply to more than one because they would fit more than one option. So we have devised alongside the IIE an option of mentioning more than one option per application.
Excellent. That's great for the applicants to know. All right, so let's move on to the next slide, more hidden gems in Canada. And this is focusing on environmental studies.
Exactly. So one of the hot topics of the moment, obviously, are climate changes. And universities in Canada are developing a lot of interesting research in the field of environmental studies. The opportunities that we have for the current competition are being offered by Lakehead University with a chair in interdisciplinary sustainable solutions, which basically encompass a wide variety of topics within the environmental studies. Also, the environmental policy from University of Ottawa that it's being offered by their research institute in the environment. The opportunities from Ottawa are very specific in that, unlike other universities, they are being offered by institutes that do research in a particular topic. So their teams are very multidisciplinary, which is a great opportunity to bring together people from different fields on a common topic, that it's the environment in this case. So you will find that this award is open to both people from the sciences, social sciences, policy. So it's a very multidisciplinary environment that you will find at the University of Ottawa. The research chair from the University of Regina is being offered in the topics related to water, environment, and clean energy. So once again, a very broad scope of topics related to environment that will enable applicants from very different areas of expertise to apply for this research chair. All of the ones that I just mentioned are, once again, a 4-month period research chairs, and they will allow the applicant to receive financial support of $25,000. And the last opportunity that I would like to highlight is the distinguished chair, once again, at the university, at Carleton University, in environmental sciences. That it's for, like the previous one, for a full academic year. And the logic is exactly the same. $50,000 will be provided to this scholar, and the scholar is expected to develop a wide variety of activities during its period at the university. And the areas of specialization, like they are listed there, are very broad. So once again, the person can be involved in different topics during its stay in Canada. One of the aspects of applicants to Canada is the French language. So all of the awards that are mentioned in these two slides are English-based awards. Although the University of Ottawa is a bilingual university, English would likely be the language that would prevail for the award. We currently have awards from universities in Quebec, mainly McGill. However, once again, we don't anticipate that French will be the main language because the university is mostly an Anglophone university. However, if you are interested in developing a research project in French, as long as you are proficient in the language, that should be perfectly fine for the application. However, from tradition, most people will be developing their studies in English. For all of these awards that I just listed, no letter of invitation is required. So, because these are all predetermined opportunities, there is no need for the applicant to seek a letter of invitation. However, we do recommend that if you are able to reach out to faculty members at the university that you are interested, that will only help the application. Not so much because they will be able to support your application, but because you are able to write a statement, a project statement that it's already aligned with what the university is looking for. That is the main advantage of reaching out to the host institution. And for that, you can contact our office in Canada, and we can provide you some introduction or the contact information of the person from the university that you're interested. In case you are having issues in contacting faculty members directly, which is something that they are expecting once they decide to offer or to host a Fulbright Award. So they are expecting that U.S. scholars might contact them during the application process. So, Michelle, this is basically what I have listed for this slide. Let me know if there's anything else that you would like
Excellent.
Me to touch base.
Excellent. Thank you, Paulo. We'll touch base during the question session. So I think this gives everyone a clear idea that there are quite a few opportunities in Canada with the partnered universities, so that makes it easy to locate faculty and maybe make some connections. So that's very helpful. Let's move on to our hidden gems in Mexico, and we've got our colleagues on the line, Erin and Jacqueline, who can talk to us.
Hi, hello. It's not on here, but I was going to highlight one other program that is the Carlos Rico for North American Studies Award.
Which that's the next slide. That's the next slide.
Okay, well, I was going to start with that. Can you go to that one first, and then we'll come back?
Sure.
To this, is that possible?
Yeah,
just because Canada just went, so we might as well touch on the connection that we share with Canada and the United States as the three big countries in North America. And this award is really phenomenal just for that, because it's an award of 4 to 10 months that is divided between Canada and Mexico. So if you have a 4-month window in your academic career and you spend 2 months in Canada and 2 months in Mexico, that's perfectly fine. Or if you have a year-long sabbatical and you spend 5 months in Canada and 5 months in Mexico, that's also equally fine. And this award is really interesting because it too can be super broad in regards to whatever topic the scholar thinks is relatable to all three countries. So if you're a specialist in environmental studies and you study the ocean flows or ocean contamination, well, if you study along the Pacific or the Atlantic, you're going to find the entire coastline from Canada to Mexico, and it's going to be of relevance and importance to all three countries. So there's anything from the STEM fields to policy about immigration, how immigration impacts Canada, how immigration impacts Mexico, how the immigration policies impact the United States, and of that nature. There's also health things that can be incorporated into this. So if you're studying something, for example, like Alzheimer's, or diabetes or whatever the health issues are that is relevant to your field of study, those can be applied throughout the entire continent, throughout the entire world. And so those are things that the Carlos Rico really is, it gives you the ability to develop by relating it to like how things are in Canada and the United States and then in Mexico. The one thing about all of our awards is, again, related to language. And again, I'm going to echo what Brazil said, and it depends on your field and what you're going to do. So if you are, you know, somebody who's interested in the Carlos Rico Award, but you're really only a native English speaker and you don't speak Spanish, just think about what you're going to be doing in Mexico if you don't speak Spanish. Are you going to be trying to teach people? Is the university that you're connected to wanting you to teach in English? Are the students able to learn in English? Are you going to be needing a translator? Things of that nature. If you're going to be doing independent research, and again, I'll echo what Brazil said, you know, conducting interviews with people, are you going to be able to conduct those interviews yourself in Spanish? Or are you going to be needing a translator? So we do take that into consideration, but in direct reflection of what the research proposal is. Are there any questions about the Carlos Rico Award?
Let's take a look, and actually, apologies, I didn't include that the teaching option is also available. So to clarify that the Carlos Rico does list teaching as well as research and teaching. Is that correct, Jackal? Let's go on for.
That is correct. You can okay. Teach in Mexico as well as Canada, I assume, and have that be the main focus of the award. So, for example, I'll take Alzheimer's. If you're a specialist in Alzheimer's, and there is a new technique or new research, and that Canada doesn't have anybody teaching on, and neither does Mexico, and there are good collaborations that you want to develop in Canada and in Mexico, like the proposal about being teaching these things is super relevant. If there is a research proposal that you're wanting to put together and half of that the research is done in Canada, but you're going to come and then develop the teaching aspect in Mexico, that's also possible, right? So it's like it's however the scholar thinks that their project is more realistic in the two countries that are available.
Great. And so, Jackal, after the webinar, let's say if we get, if applicants have questions, can they direct them to you? Or, I noticed that you and Brad are listed as the contacts at the commission.
Both me and Brad. Brad answers all the questions regarding Canada. You're welcome to write to me and ask me questions about Canada, but I will refer you to Brad Hector, who is my equal in Canada.
Okay, excellent, wonderful. And Paulo, did you have anything to add about the Carlos Rico in terms of preferences that Canada has? It seems that Mexico is very open. I assume, you know, this is an award where the topics of interest, of course, are related to North America, right?
Yeah, so like Jackal said, Brad is the staff that handles the Carlos Rico here at the office. And the overall idea that I have about this award is that what basically Fulbright is looking for are promising and relevant experts in different fields. So this award does not seem to have a specific topic. So it's pretty open to scholars that are experts in their fields and wish to develop transdisciplinary and also in different settings like Mexico, Canada, and also the U.S. For their research.
Excellent, great, thank
you. I did want to add one more thing because your photos are very indicative, and that is Indigenous studies. Right? So Indigenous studies is something that is very relevant to Canada. It's important to the United States, and it's very, very relevant and an important subject in Mexico. So again, like just different ways to adapt your specialty, whatever the scholar's specialty is, to that trinational work.
Great, thank you. That's helpful. So, Jackal, let's go to the hidden gems that I outlined here, and please do share any relevant information about these awards.
Perfect. So, I'll just go in order. The Fulbright Garcia Robles. First of all of the Fulbright awards in Mexico are called Fulbright Garcia Robles in honor of Senator Fulbright, who the award is named after for everywhere, and Alfonso Garcia Robles, who was a Nobel Prize winner from Mexico. The first award is the Postdoctoral Scholar Award, which is for anybody who's completed their PhD within the last 5 years. This award, there's one really, really nice thing about the Postdoctoral Scholar Award is that you do not have to have a home affiliation. Now, what that means is that most scholar awards come out of scholars who have, you know, professors who are working in a university. For postdocs, we understand that you might still be looking for a job, looking for that tenure position, and that having a postdoc award actually helps your CV and helps you get that ideal job that you want. So the postdocs do not require them to have a home affiliation. That's the only award that we do not require a home affiliation. Everybody else does have to have, it cannot be at large, as we call it. But postdocs can be at large. The other thing about this is that it's in whatever field is relevant to that doctoral candidate. We are in a position right now that our board of directors prefers STEM awards, so science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And again, I'll go back to what Brazil said. If your specialty is mathematics and you're going to be doing teaching but you don't speak Spanish, as long as your host invitation letter says that you're going to be teaching in English and that is fine with the institution, that is fine with us. If you have Spanish as a language strength, that does strengthen your application. But if you are developing a particular teaching application and the university does not require you to teach in Spanish, we do not require you to have Spanish as a priority. You do need to have enough Spanish to survive in Mexico because you will be living here for your grant stay. And people on the street might not speak English. So the postdoc is really, really great. We do get a lot for social sciences. Mexico is, we get a lot of people in the social sciences for a couple of reasons. One, because of the language, and also just because of the nature of the relationship, I think, between the United States and Mexico. We get a lot of people that are interested in anthropology. We get a lot of people that are interested in archaeology. We get a lot of people that are interested in immigration. But those are not our only fields that are available. If you are a mathematician, if you are a neurologist, if you are an environmentalist, those are all totally welcome fields of study. Is there any questions that I missed about the postdoc?
Let's check. Do we have any questions? It doesn't look like... no, go ahead, Jackal.
Okay. All right, so the Fulbright Garcia Robles Scholar Border Program is also very unique to Mexico, and again, it reflects the unique nature between the U.S. and Mexico, and it's only for U.S. scholars who live in one of the border states, so California, Arizona, New Mexico, or Texas. And it's only to do studies in a border state in Mexico, minus Tamaulipas that has the a travel a level 4 travel warning, and I think Sonora also has is right up there at the border. So those two would not be allowed, but Baja California, Chihuahua, are you know the other border states along Mexico are where people would do their studies. And it's a travel award. The scholar does not need to be on sabbatical. They do not live in Mexico for the 9 months or 3 months or however long they're going to do the award. They live in the United States, and it's a fixed sum of $1,300 a month in order to travel to conduct research or teach in Mexico for approximately 10 days out of the month. So that we've had some really, really interesting projects with that. We did one scholar did music across the border and developed a concert that took place at the border between the fence with musicians from Mexico playing on the Mexican side of the border and musicians from the United States playing on the Mexican side of on the U.S. side of the border. They did it, you know, Mexicans played and U.S. people listened, U.S. played, Mexican people listened, and then they did a collaboration of a concert in concert, both sides developed by the scholar. So that was super fascinating. Of course, immigration is a big topic. We've had people develop projects about that. Health across the border, environmental, like what the actual physical border wall does to the environment, about animals crossing and things of that nature. There's just a million ways that people can utilize this border scholar program.
That's great, Jackal. That's really inspiring to hear about one of the successful grantee projects. All right, anything else? We haven't got any questions yet on Mexico. Go ahead.
Sure. So the U.S. Studies Chair is another gem of Mexico, and similar to the other chair positions that Canada and Brazil have talked about, it's what we call a placed program. So the four universities that we interact with are the Instituto Tecnológico Autónomo de México, which are called ITAM, Universidad Veracruzana, which is in Veracruz. ITAM is in Mexico City, Universidad de Guadalajara, which is in Guadalajara, Jalisco, and Universidad de las Américas Puebla, which is in Puebla, not very close to Mexico City. These are all about teaching American studies at these universities. However, I think that we like to be broad when we talk about this. So last year, for example, we had somebody teaching about American business. We've had people talk, of course, teach about political science. We've had people teach about the election process. We've had people teach about the economy. We've had people teach about American Indian studies or Native American studies of the U.S. We've had people teach about American blackness through literature. So we've had the disciplines that have been the different disciplines they've been in. We've had American Indian studies, we've had literature, we've had political sciences, we've had business, we've had public policy. I don't think we've had an environmentalist yet, but I encouraged one recently to apply. It's just really broadly thought of, and we encourage scholars to think about what their discipline is and how to teach what we think of that in the United States here in Mexico. Like, how does the American way of thinking about something impact that subject, and how do we teach that differently here in Mexico? So I think that that's a really interesting thing. The one thing that's really nice about the U.S. Studies Chair is you do not have to speak Spanish, because these classes will all be taught in English, and so it is not a requirement. We do conduct interviews for all of our applicants in U.S. Scholars Program, and we conduct them in Spanish. However, the U.S. Studies Chair is the only one that we conduct all in English. That's about all I can say about it. It's only a semester long. It's 5 months. You're welcome to contact the universities, but the one thing I caution against is that even if you decide that you love Universidad de Veracruzana and that's the only place you want to do your research, if you are so close that that's the only place you want to do it, if you get selected and Universidad de Guadalajara chooses you and we think it's a better match, you might not get your university of choice.
So that's great, Jackal. So what you're saying is in the project statement, should the applicant indicate their preference? Are they allowed to reach out to the university in advance?
They are allowed to reach out to the university in advance, and they are allowed to put their preference, definitely. We will put the finalists in contact with all of the universities, and they're welcome to do interviews with all of the universities, because sometimes the universities say we only want that person, right? So even if Jackal Tanilorn wants Universidad de Guadalajara, but ITAM is the only, like, I will only take Jackal Tanilorn and nobody else, then Jackal Tanilorn gets placed in ITAM and not Universidad de Guadalajara. So that's the one. You need to have a little bit more flexibility in your application, but you're welcome to put your preference, and we'll work as hard as we can to place people where they want to be. But yeah, it's not a guarantee.
Great, and I just wanted to point out that there are actually 4 grants available for the U.S. Studies Chair. Is that correct?
So that is correct.
Technically, one could go to each location, correct?
We have four chair positions. We have 4 different scholars, and they spend one semester in one of those universities. We have 1 year where one scholar was selected by 2 new universities, and we made a very, very exceptional case for him. But typically, it's only a 5-month grant. It's 1 university, 1 scholar.
Got it. Great. So that's good to know. So that each university would only get 1.
That's correct.
Excellent. So I think we've just got a couple minutes left, and in the meantime, my colleague Kate has been answering the questions that have been coming on online, but we do have a question for Brazil. What are the specific needs for business applications? So I know that we've got several awards that are open to business in Brazil, but Patricia, did you want to chime in any particular needs?
Michelle, we don't have any specific offer in business, maybe for the all fields opportunity. As I said, all fields are welcome, but we don't have any specifics, any information, if I got your question correctly.
Okay, so in other words, they could apply for the All Disciplines Award. They could maybe fit in, if their background was in business, would it be a good fit if they had international business for the international relations, or at the Joaquim Nabuco Foundation, would those be appropriate fields to apply to those awards?
Okay, I get it. Yeah, well, if this is in accordance with the guidelines in the announcement, of course, they should apply.
Okay, great. So the answer then would be certainly to look at the fine kind of print in the award description and see if there's any particular specializations or disciplines listed for those awards. Okay, we have a question for Jackal. Do you know of any Mexican universities that welcome Fulbright scholars in the arts, specifically creative writing? So maybe they could follow up with you later if you don't have the answer on the top of your...
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of universities that do literature and creative writing, from UNAM to Ibero to, like, there's a lot. We've done, I forgot to mention a highlight of the postdoctoral award, but, I wanted to mention two that are specifically about arts. One was a woman in the communications field who studied graffiti, and graffiti is kind of conceptualized differently in Mexico, especially with the huge history of murals and mural art. So that was a very successful project. And also somebody did dance this year and was hosted by UNAM, the biggest university in Mexico, but also did a project with what's called Ciego, Danza de Ciego, which is the dancing blind, and she did a project called Gender Dancing Blindly, and the dancers themselves were blind. So we do a lot of, people can email me at any time and ask me about different host institutions and if projects are viable.
All right, great. We have another question. It says, for all speakers, I'm at my university. I teach general education undergraduate writing classes, and I have an interest in using food studies, narratives of, and research into the global food system in my writing courses. Are there awards that are particularly well suited to this approach, or would my background not be a good fit? So, undergraduate writing classes and wants to explore narratives of and researching food studies in the global food system.
Can I chime in? I don't know if anybody else has something.
Sure.
I had an anthropologist a couple of years back who literally did like the foodie community studies and like, you know, how foodie impacts here in Mexico. And food is a huge topic in Mexico. Food is a, it's the heritage, like it's one of the cultural heritages of Mexico is food. So there's a lot of ways, and I think always you can sell yourself to a university by talking about improving English writing skills or even writing skills or essay writing skills, especially, and this is one of the things that I wanted to say, is that one of how we consider to be successful projects are is if you're teaching at the undergraduate level and you're teaching in English, and those students go on to apply for a Mexican postgrado in the United States, that's super successful, right? Like we really encourage that crossover and those collaborations. So I think that there's a way to develop a project like that, and I think that it could be very attractive to universities in Mexico.
So in Canada, there are, but I'm not entirely sure that this is aligned with what the prospective applicant is looking for, but there are two research chairs focused on food security. One is actually in food safety, that it's from the University of Alberta, in which one of the specializations is the global food system and healthy human environments, and the other is from the University of Guelph in food security, and this is a more broad one related to different aspects that I would advise the person to read more about it on the Fulbright Canada website under the research chairs. If the prospective applicant wishes more information, they can always contact us at the office in Canada, and we will assist them and let them know exactly what the opportunities are for.
So Michelle, we in Brazil have had a couple of projects approved in food. I'm sorry, the correct name for this, but I just wanted to say that we had projects that were successful in the area, and we appreciate receiving different proposals. So if this person needs any help from us in locating an institution that could welcome them, there is our contact information in our announcement, and we would be happy to offer this kind of assistance.
Okay, great. We have, now I know that we are over the hour, so if any of you need to sign off, I understand, and I do have an additional slide showcasing other awards in the region, but I do have a particular question about the Carlos Rico Award, and the question is, who do I email regarding more information? It's from an Indigenous Studies professor, and she said she may also qualify for a postdoc because she completed her PhD last year. So I think essentially, Jackal, you and Brad are essentially the contacts for this award, correct?
That is correct. The one thing I can say, and Brad can give you more information on the Canada side, but I believe Canada wants senior scholars for the Carlos Rico Award, but you should talk to Brad Hector, excuse me, about that more specifically, and you can find his contact information on the Canada Fulbright website. But if you want to contact me, you're more than welcome to. I don't know if you're going to be highlighting our contact information within this PowerPoint, but you can also find that on the Comexis website. You know, you can write to me anytime and I'll help you with your questions.
Okay, great. So actually, this PowerPoint will be available on our website, and all of the awards are hyperlinked. So certainly, if you want to wait until this is available, you can wait. Otherwise, go to our catalog of awards, and you can find the Carlos Rico Award, and Jackal and Brad's names are there in the award requirements tab. So let's see if we have any other questions. Otherwise, I want to just jump really quick to the next slide and just highlight a few other countries and awards that we haven't discussed yet. And I want to thank, first of all, our commissions in Brazil, Canada, and Mexico. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. It's been extremely helpful. I think we've gotten some great questions from applicants and addressed all of those. And any of them that we haven't addressed yet, I'll be sure to follow up after the webinar. But thank you so much, Patricia and Christian, Jackal, Marin, and Paulo. I really appreciate your time. Okay, so let's move on to the other hidden gems in the Western Hemisphere. So in Chile, we have a postdoctoral early career award, specifically in astronomy and Antarctic studies. This is an exciting opportunity. It's a new award, relatively, and the aim is to enhance research efforts and increase academic exchange opportunities in these two specific areas between American academics in the U.S. and Chilean academics. And the two partners, depending on whether your background is in astronomy or Antarctic studies, the partners are with the Chilean Antarctic Institute as well as the, and the other institution that deals with astronomy studies. So there are placements listed in the award description, so you can reach out and contact them. Again, this is specifically geared towards postdoc candidates and early career scientists. And how we define early career is having received your PhD terminal degree within the last 5 years. So specifically, you would only be competing with other applicants in that pool. And then moving along, we have the award to Honduras. It's open to all disciplines, teaching, research, or a combination of both. And if you do the combination, it should be 50-50 teaching and research. This is a grant that's open to 4 to 9 months, and the flex option is available. So aside from affiliating with an institution of higher education, applicants can affiliate also with NGOs and research centers. A PhD or terminal degree is not required for this award. Panama has an exciting opportunity in science, technology, and education. This is also a 4 to 9 month award, and they're looking for someone to teach or teach and research, and the combination, the ratio is listed in the award. A letter of invitation is optional, and a terminal degree is not required, but there is some Spanish language requirements. So if you'd like to get more information about that, please see the award description. If your research can be conducted without Spanish, that should be fine. And then the All Disciplines Award in Paraguay, again, a terminal degree is not required. This is also open to teaching and research. So you'll notice a lot of these countries that have either teaching or a teaching research combo, they still have the emphasis on teaching because they'd like to build capacity and have an American faculty in the classroom teaching the subject matter in English. So as Jackal mentioned earlier, it really does help their undergraduate students aspire to, you know, doing a master's degree either in an English-speaking country or pursuing, you know, courses in English. So that's very helpful. Let's see, in Suriname, that's also an all disciplines award option, and economics and a few others are listed as preferred disciplines. Again, any discipline, any appropriate discipline is welcome, but they do list a few preferred disciplines. And something interesting about Suriname is that it's one of the few countries, it's the only country on the continent that actually has a large group of Dutch speakers. So that's an interesting fun fact. And moving on to Trinidad and Tobago, we have a multiple disciplines award in the College of Science, Technology, and Applied Arts. And this is partnered with the college there in the Port of Spain. And a research component is allowed, although the focus is a teaching grant. And you would be teaching 4 to 9 months, undergraduates primarily. And then last but not least, we have an agriculture award to Uruguay. And Uruguay is an interesting country. For those of you who don't know, it borders Brazil. It's kind of on the southern part of South America. It's a very, you know, has a rich culture and rich history, and they're looking specifically for someone to partner up with the National Institute of Agricultural Research. It's a 3-month grant, and the flex option is available. So they have multiple experimental stations where the research can be conducted, so it's a great opportunity to get your hands on experience with scientists in Uruguay and work alongside them in the field of agriculture. So at this point, I know that we've gone over about 12 minutes. I really want to thank everyone who is still with us. And we do have a lot more resources on our website in terms of how to submit a competitive application, the virtual advising sessions that we hold and everything. So I really appreciate all of you joining us today. If we weren't able to get to your question, please email us. The award catalog is available on our website, and each award has a unique program staff and contact listed there for that staff member, so you can email us directly and also direct your questions to the commission if we're not able to assist. So once again, thank you so much for joining. I'd like to thank our panelists again, and all the best on your application. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, Paulo.